Hello, everyone, and welcome. Episode 23 of the Game Train podcast. And whew, this one is jam-packed. We are fresh back from PAX Oz 2017 in Melbourne. Paris Games Week has just hit. There is all kinds of things to talk about. I mean, just PAX alone, you know, jumping into that kind of stuff. But before we get into the news, I got to mention, I'm Carl right here. I've got Callan with me, as always.
Oh, wow. I thought you were going to forget mentioning me again.
Come on, man.
I was just waiting for the throw of the news and me going...
No.
Co-host. I mean,
it is trickier not looking at you. We've done a few of the face-to-face podcasts, and my goodness, those are easy. For those of you who don't know, we record this in two separate states. I'm in Brisbane, and Callan's over there in Melbourne. So it's a bit of fun, a bit of magic happening here with technology. But all that aside, let's do it. Let's do it right now. Let's jump into the news. All right, we got a lot of news this week, especially from the Paris Games Week PlayStation presentation, which was on October the 30th, I believe. Guacamelee 2 is coming, and I'm very excited about that one. To me, the first one was one of the best Metroidvania games ever. It's co-op now, so that's really exciting, and the trailer said it's coming soon-ish.
Sucker Punch finally announced their new game, Ghost of Tsushima. It looks like to be an open world or a game set in feudal Japan.
Those are the guys that are famous for the infamous games, yeah?
That's right, yeah. So everyone's been holding out for quite a while to see what they've been working on. They've been very hush-hush about it. So they finally dropped the trailer for that. So no idea when it's going to come out or anything. At least we know what they're doing.
Destiny 2 Curse of Osiris DLC is coming on December 5. The leveling is going to go up to 25. And the light level, I believe, is going up to 330. Or power level, I should say. I'm still thinking Destiny 1.
Another new announcement from the Paris Games Week in the Sony presentation is Concrete Genie, which seems to be a game where you put living art around a city. And that is supposed to be coming out in 2018.
Monster Hunter World, the beta, is coming out on the 9th of December. So jump on that.
Shadow of the Colossus remake got a release date. It launches on February 6.
Call of Duty World War II, the Resistance DLC, is already announced and coming in January 2018.
Rocket League for the Switch got a release date. That drops on November 14.
Star Wars Battlefront loot crates have been changed due to feedback from the beta testers, and it will now be not so pay to win.
PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds on the Xbox One got a release date finally. A few people were hesitant whether it was going to come out this year, but it is. It's dropping on December 12th.
Stephen Bejo O'Donnell, the other half to Hex from the old Good Game Spawn Point on ABC, has announced his resignation to stream full-time on Twitch.
The Last of Us 2 got a brand new trailer. This looks amazing. The graphics look superb. The trailer was tense and gritty. It looks so good. Go check it out on our Facebook page.
www.facebook.com/GameTrainPodcast. okay. And we've just got a whole bunch of games to throw at you right now because PlayStation Plus and Xbox Games with Gold have both announced their games for November. For PlayStation Plus, we've got Bound, Dungeon Punks, Worms Battlegrounds, and on the PSVR, Until Dawn, Rush of Blood, which will be available from November 7 all the way until January 3rd. They're calling that one a bonus game. So that's it's really cool. Another PSVR game on there for free. For PS3, they've got R-Type Dimensions, Ragdoll Kung Fu, Fists of Plastic. And for the Vita, they've got Dungeon Punks and another exciting one for me, which is Broken Sword 5, The Serpent's Curse, Episodes 1 and 2. On Xbox, for Games with Gold, on the Xbox One, they've got Trackmania Turbo, which will be all of November. Tales from the Borderlands, which is November 16 to December 15. And the Turing Test, which is right now till November 15. On Xbox 360, they've got Nights into Dreams and Deadfall Adventures. And with all of that, ladies and gentlemen, that is the news.
Boom. All right, guys. Boom. So, yeah, we're just, as we mentioned in the intro, back from PAX now. So we thought we'd just have a little discussion about some of the games we saw at PAX again.
Yes, and this is going to be our games we've been playing section because that's That's what we've been playing.
Pretty much.
A whole bunch of these beautiful indies.
That's right.
You want to start with this one? You already went in looking for one, I remember.
I went in there looking for Projection because I'd seen the trailer some time ago and I found it in there, as you do.
Yeah, as you do in a place full of exactly what you're looking for. By Shadowplay Studios.
That's right. They're based in Sydney. The game didn't disappoint. It looks gorgeous. We spoke about this a little on our PAX podcast, but thought we'd bring it up again because I love the look of this game. It's coming out on Nintendo Switch, actually, as well, which I'm pretty excited about, so I'll be getting it on the Switch. This game where you play as this shadow puppet.
This little girl.
And you manipulate light to change the shadows, you know, in the stage to get around puzzles and environmental puzzles and things like that.
It's almost like the shadows become solid.
It's like a stage light and shadows become solid, and then you can sort of move up and over things and things like that. So it looks really interesting. It's a different way of doing puzzles, I feel.
Yeah, and what surprised me, it was just visually gorgeous. And when we were chatting to the Shadowplay Studios guys, what really sort of resonated with me is that the themes of the game are closely related with popular tales and legends from all over, like Indonesia, China, Turkey, Greece, England. Like these really old, beautiful stories all sort of melded together in their style. And, when we went in there, we saw it's also because they have such a multicultural studio as well. So they're sharing all their stories in this one gorgeous piece of art.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. It's got a beautiful sepia tone look to it. Sort of film grain look as well.
Limbo vibe.
Yeah, it didn't disappoint at all.
I jumped onto a little game called Spearbound by the Muesli Bros. And I got suckered right into that one for the 16-bit console era art. But the sprites were just beautiful, but like quite big and very animated and cute, you know. So I jumped in to check it out. And turns out it's this awesome sort of 2D action-based platformer where the main protagonist is this girl that uses a spear to do all the moves that we're used to seeing in gaming, but making them realistic. They said they had this big importance on realistic movement and anatomy. So when she does a jump, you know, to grab a ledge that we're used to being able to just jump straight onto with characters like Mario, she can't quite reach it, but she uses her spear to do it. Sorry. And when she's running and she wants to speed up, she vaults herself forward with the spear or vaults up like a pole vault. A double jump is not just jumping up in midair for no reason. She actually lifts her legs to create more air underneath her. And there's a beautiful soundtrack. The visuals are gorgeous. I think this one's really cool. It looks like it's coming out on Steam, and I'm quite excited for that one.
Also, we spoke to some of the guys from Defiant Development and about their new game, which comes out next week, November 7.
Oh, wow.
Hand of Fate. So this comes out on Steam, Xbox One and PS4. It is a card game mixed with an RPG mixed with sort of third person action combat, I guess you could say. So that sort of blends all three into this one game. So you sort of make a deck of cards, which is kind of like your abilities and things like that. And you go out into the world and then you progress through and do challenges and things like that. So that looks interesting, and I'm going to be picking it up when it comes out in a few days' time because, I'm quite keen to jump in and check out that a bit more.
Yeah, it does look really pretty. Watching it, I don't know, Hand of Fate, I'd never really played the first one, and just from the name alone, I kind of thought it was very much more a card game than I realized. It's a lot more sort of RPG, and cards is just one of the, many sort of genres that they've all blended together in that one.
Yeah, that's right. So, it should be interesting to see how it all comes together in the final package.
Yeah, so I think we'll definitely have a chat about that once you actually buy it and dive right in. One of the last ones we checked out, which is this beautiful game that just completely floored me. Again, I was walking past, we were just checking out all the displays, and there was this just beautiful artwork, which, was kind of impressive, but then I just saw something about based in Melbourne. The game is about, when you look at this artwork, it just looks like this beautiful anime and this, I don't know, almost post-apocalyptic, rundown world. And the game's called Necro Barista. It's by Root 59. And it was not like anything I've played that I can really describe. It was kind of like you're living through a story, and there's each time you sort of click the mouse, they have a different bit of information, and they're kind of like subtitles, and you're kind of reading it through like a storybook, and there's these cool dynamic camera angles and things, and then you start being able to make choices, and you can pause the scene wherever you want, and then have this sort of first person view of an onlooker and look at everything in the background and click on different things so that you understand the context, and then dive right back into the scene and watch it unfold more. And you play this, it's so hard to describe. You're in this like limbo world that's in a,
you'd say it's more purgatory,
cafe in Melbourne. Yeah, like kind of like purgatory. And there's all these like people who have died, but they're not quite moved on to death yet. Your main protagonist, we don't know whether she's one of those who've moved on or not. It's not made clear, but everyone's sort of battling and doing this gambling for extra time to spend in the cafe. Because once their time runs out, I guess they have to move on to whatever it is to be dead, which is also not clear. I don't know. It's really poetic. It's really beautiful. It's presented in this like glorious looking artwork that's like cel-shaded and moody, but still funny and quirky. Very anime. It's coming out on Steam and the Switch, and it's coming early 2018, so I'm really excited to jump into that one. But yeah, I think, did you get a hold of any other games while we were at PAX?
Yes. So, okay, this is pretty much the last thing I did at PAX. I was kicking myself after EB Expo that I didn't go check out Monster Hunter World.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, I went.
Yes.
You know, went lined up. And had a go of it. I was so tired when I was trying to say it. I don't think my head was in the game at the time, you know?
Oh, literally, yeah.
Like, it was fun. Like, I'd never played Monster Hunter game before, so I was, like, running around. I didn't know what was going on half the time, like, hunt a monster, you know, follow the scent and footprints and things like that. And then the battles go for quite a while, which is not a bad thing at all. But it was just,
I mean, it is kind of all about the battles.
I just didn't know really what to expect from it. So it was cool to just sit down or stand up and have a good 15 minutes playing it. So I'm going to be jumping into the beta next month when it launches. So they'll be better because, you know, be able to actually have a bit more time in the game and actually get a bit more what it's about. Because, at an expo, sometimes it's a bit hard to, you know, sit there and get fully immersed in something.
Yeah.
Also, the other game I checked out was also Far Cry 5.
Oh, yeah.
I just walked up. There wasn't really a line. I just walked up, sort of went jumped on, had a bit of go on that. I'm sure it was an alpha build or something I played because the loading times were very long.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
okay.
I mean, like, frustratingly long.
Oh, I hope that's a thing that.
I hope it doesn't launch like that because. Yeah, that's going to hurt, but the actual gameplay and all that felt cool. I had a dog with me, and I was sending the dog at people, which was always fun. You know, jumped in a car, drove around a bit. It looked pretty. It's what you gathered from the trailers that have been out, you know, and if you've played Far Cry before, you kind of know what to expect. But, you know, the setting looked cool. That sort of, Middle America, sort of, or Southern America sort of setting. Yeah. So that comes out in February, and it's going to be co-op. Oh, also a new trailer dropped for that too, a co-op trailer. So that
which
looks
showed
fun.
Off the co-op.
Yeah.
Nice. Just from the trailers, like the earlier trailers, I'm all of Far Cry in general. I'm really excited to jump into that world, but also the thing about Far Cry that differentiates sort of that from any of Ubisoft's other games is the characters. I'm really excited to meet them. They're always so interesting to me. So that's the games we've been playing this week, which is a little different to normal. We'll jump straight back into those SNES Classic Minis with Kirby and all that next week, but more on that then. It is now time for this week's shout-out, which it was very clear to both of us what this week's shout-out should be, and that is one that we have yet to mention officially, in an official sense, and that is Genghis Tuan Videographer. Guys, if you've seen any of our video content, which has even surprised ourselves. Like, I just think it looks amazing, and it's all due to this guy. He's been following us around everywhere. He does all of our media stuff. He's made sure that our sound is spectacular. The editing, the filming itself has just been top notch. He's captured things that we didn't even know he was capturing, moments that just really created it. But his own work is just stunning. He's done a lot of stuff. You can check it out on genghistuan.com, which is just GENGHISTUAN.com. And all his portfolio and all that is all on there. His Instagram as well is a lot of fun. He does a lot of like still images with moving parts in it and just a lot of beautiful imagery. He has a very high belief in product quality, and everything has to be just right with Tuan, which is really cool. I'm always excited to see what he's working on and his latest projects, even if they're just little snippets. Yeah, again, his Instagram is just Genghis_Tuan. So yeah, jump on there, check it out, and, you know, show him some love. But and if you ever see us running around with this random guy behind us and all this equipment hanging off him, that's Genghis Tuan. So thank you so much for following us to PAX and making it beautiful for us.
Thank you, Tuan. I owe you some ramen, by the way.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, so that's our shout out for the week, which brings us right into our double feature this week, which we had to do. And, you know, we had to take an extra week just to be able to play these games. We're going to start off with the one that the world's been waiting for. Super Mario Odyssey. It's time to jump up in the air. Jump up, don't be scared. Jump up and your cares go so away. And if you jump out, so just wait. Don't be scared. Alrighty, so, Super Mario Odyssey. Developed and produced by Nintendo, it is the next big Super Mario game that we've been waiting for since, what, the two Galaxy ones?
Yeah, it's been a while between drinks there, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And I mean, like, it's the first sort of even bigger one. It's kind of like right in between that sort of Super Mario 64 and Super Mario Galaxy level hopping. Because it's not like level by level, but it's world by world. You're not, there's no big, huge hub that some were expecting. You know, where you're jumping into pictures or anything. You just kind of go from world to world, but they're just massive and there's so much to collect. You got to collect these sort of moons instead of the old stars. And there's, what was it, like 800 of them or some giant number?
Yeah, some ridiculous number like that. Like, it's just, you know, when we, Carl started playing it the other night and I was watching him, you know, it's like, oh yeah, cool. I got all the moons in this level, and I was like 14 or 15 moons. I'm like,
yeah,
oh,
and I moved on.
I'm like, oh, that's cute. That's nice. And then he opened up this other menu, and then there's like a list of 50. I'm like, what? And I'm like, for one level?
Yeah, and then some of them have like 80.
Yeah, 16, and then some are down the then I saw someone post somewhere. Oh yeah, how many out of the 800 something moons have you got? I went, what, 800? Like, you know, Mario 64 was, what, 120 stars?
Yeah.
You know, if it had been 150 moons, I would have been like, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, so they're not all as crazy as the ones in 64 where every star was kind of like a, you know, a bit of a level or a longer challenge. Some of these are, but some of them are like just around a corner you don't see or underneath a bush or you stomp, you know, a certain mound in the ground and out comes a moon. But some of them are like, you got to fight a boss or you got to go through a maze or, and, but it's all, I don't know, it's really fun collecting everything. They really nail the collectathon, these guys. Like, you can get like three moons at once all joined together, or you can get like little pieces of five moons to create one. And it's, the game is undeniably fun to play. Every moment is fun. There's no like, you know, long slogs of doing the same thing or like, there's no grinding in that way. Everything is well thought through. It's just, you can tell these guys are just the master of the art of video game enjoyment.
Yep, that's very true. Like, it's just, I don't know, it just has this style to it that you just go, oh man, it just breathes fun straight away.
I mean, there's something about the world that Nintendo and Shigeru Miyamoto have created with Super Mario in that you can almost do anything. Like, you know, like, right at the start, I was playing this with my girlfriend, with Jack, and right at the start, she was excited to play, but she's like, what is that? Is that a ghost hat in Hat World? You know, this, okay, that's a bit weird. And then, like, 5 minutes in, and you're attached to your ghost character, and you love them, and you don't think it's weird anymore. Like, there's just hats that live there. And then there's a dinosaur, and it's fine because it's Mario. You know, and then there's a spaceship, and then there's Mexicans in ice, and it's all fine.
And then suddenly you're in a city?
Yeah, like a realistic city with proper buildings and people. And I thought that was going to be weird when I first saw the trailers, but it's not. It's just as quirky and enjoyable as
I think that's my favorite level I've played so far.
Yeah, that level was just stunning. There's so many things that we can't even mention that will just... things I don't want to spoil, because half of it is the discovery and the feeling of playing it. Like, half of my enjoyment I got out of this game was watching Jack, and she was playing it, and she hadn't seen all the trailers, and she hadn't followed it like I have. And seeing her face light up the first time you throw your hat at the very first frog, she just looked at me, like, mouth wide open, going, like, what is going on? I'm like, I don't know, just check it out, see what happens. And she's like, I'm the frog. Oh, my God, I'm the frog. I can do frog things.
Yeah.
What? And then she became the bullet bill and was like, oh, what? I'm the bullet. I can go over this, like, air and blow up something far away. And every time she learned a new mechanic, and it was just the perfect indication of the game's purity and its pursuit of fun.
Well, the hat is sort of like the quip for this one, isn't it?
It's the new replacement to power-ups.
Yeah. You would just see an enemy, and you'd be like, oh, I wonder. And you just throw your hat, and suddenly you got this brand new ability. Like, I was playing this one level, and there's like these... what are they? Like caterpillar things that are like...
Yes.
Extend out. And I looked at it and went, I wonder. And I threw my hat. Suddenly I'm the caterpillar thing. And I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. I'm like, wonder what can do. I had stretched out a little. I'm like, oh, I don't like this. And jumped out and just kept going with the level. But then I came back to it and I'm like, actually, I think I need that for something. Then I realized I could extend out over gaps and then turn midair with this caterpillar thing to get things around corners, around gaps.
Yep.
I'm brilliant. Like, what?
Yeah. And they keep surprising you, like, time after time. They just do these, like, and it's not always enemies. You know, like, that hovering lizard guy, he was just a friend. He's chatting to you like, hey, here I am, I've just been trying to discover, and you're like, shut up, and you throw your hat at him, and then you're him, and I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
I can be this guy?
Yep.
So, I mean, it's just surprises at every turn, you know, like, they still have so many little secrets that they've always been famous for, like, you just jump in a certain spot, and a magic block appears, and you're like, how'd that happen? Then you jump on top of that block, and then you go, like, three blocks high, and suddenly there's a moon, you know, like... it's just so Mario that the secrets are all around you. You just have to kind of just look around, just go have fun and play, and you discover as you play. It's different in like some games. You're looking and you're searching. In this, you just go have fun and you'll find the secrets, and they make you just light up every time.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and it, you know, you just sort of progress through the levels. You got to get a certain amount of moons to move on to the next world. But then you can, you know, go through and get every moon in that world if you want. You know, it's up to you what you want to do. I've been sort of just jumping through as many worlds as I can just to see, you know, just the variety of worlds. And I was kind of really keen to get to New Donk City as well.
Yeah, so, New Donk City was just like, man, just gorgeous.
But, you know, it's got that whole Mario charm to it. Like, the music is very Mario. There's some more old, you know, tunes that you're always familiar with, plus some new ones.
Yeah. They've done a new thing which I haven't ever seen, where they play a lot of the old school tunes, you know, and mix it into the modern sort of orchestras and you know, which we've all seen done before in the slightly newer Marios coming up. But what they've also done is when you go into those like really cool 8-bit 2D sections, they take the current beautiful orchestrated new music of the current level, and they turn that into like the 8-bit music.
Yep. So
it's this whole, like, the whole game is a beautiful love letter to Mario, Super Mario fans of like, throughout the entire history of the game. It's just so kind. They're just doing beautiful things. They're, like, doing it for the gamers, and I can see and appreciate that, and I love it. Absolutely love it.
So, it being on Switch, motion controls with the Switch.
Yes. Now, this is something, this is the one sort of downside, because a lot of it, we were talking about it, you have to shake the controller sometimes to do certain shots and make certain moves, which there is no other button for at times. Yeah, and sometimes you got to shake your whole Switch, which is just not right. It just feels a bit weird.
Yeah, it's like with that, I remember you saying it to me. I'm like, oh, he's just overreacting. But yep. Then I started to play it. And I'm like, oh, no. Like, because actually, the whole time I've played it in handheld mode, I haven't put it on the TV yet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I'm sitting there and I'm shaking my Switch around. I'm like, I don't like this. I'm like, just give me an option just to put it to one of the other buttons. Like, yeah, just okay. give me that option to choose. And yeah, that's the one thing I think that hurts this game is that reliance on motion controls.
Yeah, now this is something I forgot to mention to you. So all that said, I think I'm ready to give this game its score.
Yep.
And this is the thing. I've seen a lot of people give this top scores, and I thought, am I going to give it top scores? And that shaking thing was like just going to take it down to like a 9.8 or a 9.9 for me. However, I just found out that you can go into the menu, and when you're playing it on the Switch handheld, you can make it very sensitive to the shake thing, so that as soon as you throw your hat, you barely just sort of tap it down ever so lightly, and it does it for you, and it just fixes that.
Oh.
So... yeah, I forgot to mention it to you. I saw it just yesterday because it was just really annoying. And I went in there to change other stuff, but you can change things you've never been able to change in a Mario game, like the actual camera movement sensitivity. I just maxed mine out. So it's like a smooth PC game now. Like I just move the camera around myself and then I set that shaking thing. You set it to like, yeah, really sensitive. You throw your hat and you just sort of move it ever so slightly and it works and it feels so intuitive now. And I just never would have expected that. So having said that, and this could be one of the greatest examples of a video game in definition ever, I have to give this a 10. It's a straight up 10 for me. I love it.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I found something bad and I was like, cool, I can finally give it something different that everyone's giving it because I found this bad thing in it that I have to mention.
You're not just following like a sheep here, are you?
Yeah. No, that's what I thought. I was like, finally, I can just, you know... I can do the, you know, I can say like, no, this isn't a 10 because this thing here is really annoying me. And then it fixed itself. And I was like, God damn it, Mario. I'm trying to evaluate you. But I mean, all the challenges, all the frustrations aren't ever too challenging. And they always feel satisfying when you nail them. It's just a beautiful game. And playing it on the go is just bloody ridiculous that you can hold that in your hand. It's gorgeous to look at.
Wow. Well, I didn't review it because I was reviewing the other game that came out.
So, Callan will give us his number and review next week. The one that Callan was doing, because we had to split these games. We couldn't do them both. Callan, let's hear it.
Okay. Assassin's Creed Origins.
Your legend, Assassin, is spreading.
So, Assassin's Creed Origins is the latest in the Assassin's Creed series. This is published and developed by Ubisoft. So, the team took a break for 2 years from releasing a game. And this is made by the Ubisoft team that made Black Flag. So, they've got a few different teams that work on different games. So, this is the Black Flag team, which Black Flag's regarded as one of the best in the series of Assassin's Creeds. So everyone was very excited with this one. So this one is set in Egypt. You play as Bayek, who is avenging the death of his son.
And is just stupidly awesome.
He's a very strong, aggressive protagonist, you could say.
Yeah, but still very tender. Like he smiles and he laughs and he cares a lot for his son. He's warm but protective.
Yeah, and he's sort of, what's the word, I guess, he's very set in the way he does things as well.
Yeah, yep, which reminds me of Altair.
Yeah, you know, well...
The last earlier.
The story is also about the origin of the Assassin's Creed Brotherhood.
Yeah. So the Creed itself.
Yeah, the Creed itself. So I'm guessing he somehow or in the game makes the Creed and all things like that. But yeah, so going to Egypt, I was really excited about this. Like, oh yes, let's go to Egypt. And then I thought, oh, but then you think of Egypt and you think, all right, it's not very high. It's very desert. There isn't much going on. But then when you actually sit down and play the game, no, there is actually a lot there. Like, they've done, instead of just a city this time, they've done a country. So it's the country of Egypt.
It's just overwhelmingly massive.
It is so huge. Like, I'm saying, I'd go so far to say almost on Witcher scale in terms of world.
Yeah.
It's pretty big. I haven't had a look at any comparison maps, but the feel of it is quite expansive.
Yeah.
But then the variety of locations they've put in this game, so it's just not a big desert. Like, the Nile goes through Egypt, obviously, but and alongside there is a lot of marshlands and things like that. But then there's, like, oases. The cities are beautiful. Like, the city of Alexandria is gorgeous.
Yeah, and it feels like traversing in... Like, it felt like, oh, this is not really Assassin's Creed-y, but as soon as you get to Alexandria, it feels exactly like Assassin's Creed 1, you know, in Jerusalem, like,
but
bigger and prettier still. So I'm like, well, it's actually... It's almost... taller and more city than some of the other Assassin's Creeds in some ways.
Yeah, and of course you got the pyramids to climb up as well.
Of course, which, so you got to do that.
And there's back on the environments, there's deserts and there's like canyons. Like it, as you go through the game, it just feels like there's enough variety there. There's farmlands as well. There's a lot going on. So another thing that you've
I was just gonna say Egypt is just so. Once you're in there, you realize it's so gamey. Like, it's such a video game world. Like, there's secrets and there's tunnels and there's tombs, all kind of already naturally connected to Egypt in people's minds. And that fits so well in exploring in a video game.
Yeah, and you can go hunting as well. So you can just run out in the desert and hunt some hyenas or go down the Nile and hunt some crocodiles or hippos.
And it feels great, like shooting out a bird from the sky.
Yep.
While on your horse or camel, feels amazing.
Yeah, the camels. Yeah, I didn't know you could ride camels around. And I'm like, oh, I'm on a camel. Cool. Yep. And another big revamp they've done is the combat. So they've taken the old style combat and of just like one button tapping, and they've added a light attack and a heavy attack, and also the ability to hold a shield and raise your shield, and they've put dodging into the game a bit more as well. So it's a lot more movement. It's like, I guess, a cross between Dark Souls and Witcher. I'd say Dark Souls light in the way the combat works.
Yeah, yep. I'd say that. And they're brutal. Like, they'll get you.
Oh, yes.
You know, and they will just beat you up if you don't dodge perfectly.
Yeah, you've got to dodge, you've got to parry, you've got to counter, you've got to bust their shields down and get that opening. You've got to move around them. Your assassinate skill doesn't always one hit kill now as well, which took me by surprise. Like the first time that happened, I jumped on someone like, you're dead. And it was like a big, enemy. And then he just jumps up and swings his club. I'm like, what? No, you're supposed to be dead.
Yeah, exactly. Cause he's kind of, it makes sense. Cause he's just the very first and he's just learning how to do all this stuff.
Yeah. I also, with the revamp of the combat, they've revamped the whole system of the game itself. So now there is a lot of RPG elements. So there are 40 levels. There is a full expansive skill tree with like three different ways you can go around the tree. There is gear you pick up throughout the game. You can upgrade your gear. Each piece of gear has different stats. Some have bonus abilities like life on hit, etc. You do different amounts of damage depending on what you're using. There are damage numbers that come up in the game, which is something different as well. So I really like this sort of revamp that they've gone down. It feels so familiar in the way the game looks and feels, but it feels so fresh in the new systems they've put into place.
Yeah, and man, like all of my feelings of playing Witcher 3 came back when you get a good chunk of that map explored and then you press pause and there's all these question marks. All the question marks, like, you go to them and they're either like little places that you can explore or there's someone with a quest to give you, and there's like heaps of quests, which is just very well organized. You can set them by distance to you or by when you got the last one or level and so on. And like, and there's always your main quest there, but there's even that other like RPG element where there's that little kid that sells you stuff and he's got like either legendary gear or, you know, some epic gear, and every day he has a mission for you, and if you complete it within the 24 hours he'll give you like a guaranteed sort of legendary thing. So there's that kind of like going back every day to try and do that. And there's, have you seen that multiplayer thing where you can avenge people just like Shadow of War?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. Yeah, you come across like a dead body in the ground and it's like player John, and you're like, oh, what? John's dead?
You're like, that's a weird name.
Yeah.
John 22358.
Yeah. And then that's, it's like, avenge John's death, and then you got to go kill the hippo that killed John.
Yep. Which, and sometimes it's a gang, or sometimes it's some captain guy, or sometimes it's just a random hyena, and you're like, wow, John, really?
They've revamped the I guess, side quests as well. So you've got the main quest, but then there's a lot of side quests as well. But they've done this really cool, it reminded me a lot of The Witcher as well, that each of these side quests is like a mini story. And it's not just, oh, go kill the head bandit. Like, some of these side quests go on and on and on as this one big, like, chain through itself. But different things are going on, and it's not just boring. It's not like, oh, go help the lady. But then that lady's got reasons behind all this. Like, just the way they've presented it, it just felt so like Witcher 3, where every time it's like, oh, what's this story going to be about? Not just, oh, roll eyes, it's another side quest.
And it's unpredictable, like, oh, I don't know which ones to mention. I don't want to spoil any, but like one of the things that happens, which is very witchery as well, is that you meet someone who has a clear problem and then you help them, and then they're not the ones that you want to help anymore because the story changes and, you know, throws you to like help the other people that they were against. And you're like, wait, no, you're in the wrong. So you switch sides, and then sometimes it happens again and someone else comes and you're like, what is going on? Who is in the wrong here?
Yeah.
And it's just a side quest.
Yeah, exactly. They've put a lot of thought into side quests, which I'm really enjoying as well. So, you know, normally it feels like a chore, but it doesn't feel like a chore because of all these little sub-stories that are just mixed out throughout the game. And it'll be like, you'll be finding out things about some of the main targets that you got to kill, but just other influences they've had over the people of Egypt.
Yep.
There's a lot of that going on too, but the visuals of this game are beautiful. Like, the game looks stunning, but, and here's the big but, this frame rate drops and just jerky visuals at times brings...
Oh my god, this one's so interesting.
Brings it down. Like, that hurt. Like, sitting down, I'm like, yes, here we go, and I spin the camera, and oh, it's going slow. Oh, look at that, it's dropped really slow frame rate. Oh, we've just jumped forward a bit. And then, I was talking before about the camel. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm on a camel, oh my gosh. And then I looked down and it was just this really awkward animation with the camel. I'm like, oh.
Yep, swap straight to the horse.
Oh, okay, camel, cool. Well, you're going in the cupboard.
Yep.
And then some of the animations of the characters talking were just not current gen
quality. The side quest ones, anyway. The main ones look amazing.
Yes.
When they're close up, like, really good. So it's not like Fallout 4 problems or anything like that. Like,
no.
Him and his wife and his friends, they all look... I've seen, like, when the camera zooms right up, I'm like, wow, okay, that's very emotive and pulls me in. But yeah, some of those side guys, I do know the ones you mean.
Yeah, I feel that brings it down as well. And also, some of the voice acting is quite deadpan at times.
Yep.
It sort of brings you out of that story. Like, it would be a great story, but some of the voice actors are like, oh, yeah, and then we do this. And I'm like, oh, right, okay, cool.
Yeah, now, I have to stop you before you go too far because, and I did mention this to you earlier in the week, but I've had more time with Assassin's Creed now to compare it. And I saw you playing it on your PlayStation at home, and it was like, trying to run it on a PC that wasn't quite strong enough to hold it, which is weird, because at my house, on the Xbox One, not the Xbox One X even, just the normal one, I haven't seen any of that. None of it. It is smooth as silk, and it is gorgeous. Like, even in, I've gone into, like, really busy places, trees everywhere, fighting, and I've you know, turned the camera around me while fighting against some animals, and it's just no frame rate drops. It looks gorgeous. It even just feels good to move that camera around. It's, like, smoother than most games. So I was really taken aback by that, because that's just the Xbox One. I haven't even tried it Obviously, it's not out yet, and I can't wait to dive into the Xbox One X and look at it. But just on Xbox One, so I don't know if that has to do with the TV itself, because I'm using it on like a 55-inch 4K Sony screen. I don't know if there's like some sort of latency issue or anything like that. But it was, for those listening, I saw it on both TVs, and there was a clear difference, which is, I hope it's something to do with Callan's TV, because it's really unfortunate if that's how different it runs on the two consoles, one being a pro.
Yeah, that was the thing that took me back. Maybe it's just better optimized for the Xbox.
Maybe. You know, and I did say that I thought that could have been the case, because they've been sort of pushing this as like a flagship Xbox One X game.
Yep.
You know?
Well, I'm going to move on to the score now.
Yeah, oh, nice. Just quickly before we move on, I did want to say a couple of things. One is, I love the feeling of every weapon. They all feel different,
yep.
Which is really cool. It's not just like weapon and arrow. Like, even all the bows and arrows, they all feel really different. They have classes, like kind of like shotgun, sniper sort of things, where some shoot like five spread out. One is a long distance one. Some are really fast, kind of like you're using the SMG or something. That and the sound design is incredible. Like, if you put on a good pair of headphones or you turn up some good surround sound, just the wind, the animals, the crickets, like the talking. When Bayek speaks, he sounds incredible. And then when you use a costume that covers his mouth with a sheet, he's slightly muffled. It's just brilliant. And on the bad point, one of them is that the massive world can be a little bit overwhelming.
Yep. All right, well, coming into my score now after this review, it's going to sound harsh, but I'm going to just give it a 9. Like, it was...
Yep.
Like, nice. I feel this is, like, on par with, like, Black Flag, etc., which I still feel they're about a 9 as well, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But I'm giving it that. Yep. Just the graphical letdown hurt.
Yeah, that sucks, man. You've got to try it on Xbox next time you're around.
Yep, but, yeah, it's... This is seriously a solid game. If you love open world games, if you love the Assassin's Creed series and you're wondering whether you should dive back in, do it. It is an awesome game. And yeah, but for me, just that little graphical hiccups have just really hurt the score for me.
Yeah, damn. I wonder what your score would be on the Xbox. Would that have been a full 10?
No.
Damn, and why not?
Why not?
Yeah.
Really putting me on the spot here.
I just want to hear if, you know, outside of the graphical, because I just want to say, like, does that mean it's a 10 if you have it on Xbox for people who are listening? Because there is no graphical
issue. I'd say 9.3 to 9.5.
Okay. Just wanted to,
yeah, like, just to know. Yeah, it feels very familiar, but then sometimes it feels a bit too familiar. Like, it feels that at times it is using the same engine, etc., which it probably is in some ways, as Syndicate, etc. There isn't big enough departure from that, especially with the climbing, etc. But yeah,
yep.
But I am giving this one a 9.
Cool. I just want, yeah, just for any Xbox listeners out there, and for that curious. Cool. Well, I obviously won't give it anything. I haven't quite given it the amount of time that Callan has, so I'll give my score next week on that. But ladies and gentlemen, that was Assassin's Creed Origins. Okay, so that brings us into Backtrack. This is the part of the show where we jump into this week in the history of games.
What we're going to do right here is go back. Way back. Back into time.
Now, this time, I've got a slightly modern one. On the 5th of November, 2007... Activision released Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare for the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, which just, like, that was the game that put them on par with, like, the other big, massive first-person shooter, which was Halo. So it used to be, you know, you're either a Halo guy or you play a bunch of other first-person shooters, like, you know, Medal of Honor, Call of Duty, and they were all in this big sort of group. But as soon as this one dropped, it was, okay, now it's Call of Duty or Halo. Like, it just became the thing that it is today. And they just started doing Modern Warfare and different things as their own numbered thing instead of Call of Duty 5 and so on and so forth. So wow. pretty big day in the history of the first person shooter, I think.
I was late to that party. I picked up Modern Warfare 2 when it came out.
Ah.
So I missed that on the first one. But I've heard it's very, very good.
And there is a remaster out at the moment, yes. for better or for worse. Mm-hmm. So if you did miss that and you want to see what started it all, like, it's funny because there's obviously Call of Duty 1, but Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare kind of started it all as what it is right now, with the multiplayer being just like almost perfect and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, a bit of a simple one, but that is this week's Backtrack. Which brings us really quickly into the moment I've been waiting for 3 weeks, Callan.
Yep.
It is time for passenger queries, our questions.
Yep.
And we have one here from Reef. Poor Reef has been waiting with me. And here's the question that I've had my answer for a little while, but Callan needed some time to really think. So I can't wait to hear this like beautifully thought out answer. Ladies and gentlemen, the question one more time is, who is your favorite video game protagonist and why? All right, Callan, let's hear it.
Can I have another week?
No, you cannot. You promised us last week.
Just one more week, man. I've been so preoccupied with like PAX and Assassin's Creed and Mario and everything like that. Like,
mate, all you needed was a moment on the toilet to have a little ponder.
Oh man, like, I've got a few, but I struggled with this in some ways because a lot of the protagonists I like have also become anti-heroes and then into antagonists themselves. It's like,
yep.
Do you just say that as a whole, like this character, but then it's like, oh, it's just the character I love. I don't know. It's, or do you just choose someone that's always been kind of good?
Just pick one.
Fine. All right, I've got a few. All right.
No.
Yep.
I don't want to hear that. No, God, if you had
don't
three
care.
Weeks,
don't care. All right,
then I'm going first, because if you're going to start naming every character in the like video game library, then I'll have no answer left. So I've got one. I've had one since the very start. I'm going to let you sit on your few there. My single one favorite video game protagonist is John Marston from Red Dead Redemption. He is just, without doubt, the favorite person and personality and character that I've played as ever. He's like a complete 100% don't mess with him badass. He has this awesome voice. He's super quick and short and rude to people he doesn't respect, but gives so much time to those he does. He'll help people who genuinely need it, and he is just the most loyal and amazing man to his wife and son. He goes to like all these strip clubs and things, you know, well, not strip clubs, but brothels, you should say, in the old days, and all these different like hot ass ladies come up to him and ask him for some, you know, giggity goo time, and he always says like, no, I'm spoken for, you know, I've got someone waiting for me at home. And I just think, wow, what an awesome thing to represent in a game, a loyal, powerful guy. And he's just like so kind, but just such a badass when he wants to be. He just walks in a room and he owns it. So yeah, John Marston, right to the end, is the man. Like, what he does for his family, those kind of things, this guy is just the king. So what's your answer, Callan?
Gosh, now I'm on the spot. Gosh, all mine sound terrible compared to that now.
I've had that same one for 3 weeks. That's why I've been sitting on it.
I know. I'm like, well, one of my favorites is like Arthas from the Warcraft series, but then he's like the worst person ever because he went and murdered an entire town thinking he was saving them from the plague.
What? Why did he do it? Because he thought he was saving them from the plague.
Yeah, so this plague goes through the town, so he decided to burn the whole town because he thought he was saving everyone. But then they all turn undead. But then, yeah, he thought he was doing the right thing. See, this is why I struggle with this, right?
Well, he thought he was doing the right thing. If you like him, you like him.
But then he then gets corrupted and he actually becomes undead himself. But then he fights back against these other evil forces out there. It's quite confusing. But then he eventually turns full evil eventually. And then Blizzard wrecked his character.
Damn.
See, there was a lot of layers
to
it. So
is that your favorite protagonist?
No. Kind of.
Well, then why are we talking about
it? I don't know. He's a cool character.
I don't know if the question was, what's a cool character? I could go on all day about
that. Okay. Well, how about we just go with Solid Snake then?
Solid Snake.
Yep. Yeah, so I didn't go Naked Snake. Now, Naked Snake was awesome too, but Solid Snake, I really like Solid Snake. He's just this cool, badass character. You know, always, you know, trying to save the world, things like that. But, you know, there's a lot of layers and depth to his character too.
Yeah, and so early in, like, the gaming world, which was a rare time for people to be that, like, multi-dimensional in their personalities, which is really cool to see.
Yeah.
Good old Kojima.
And then, you know, by the time Metal Gear Solid 4 rocks around, and then, you know, he's aged heaps as well, and he's like...
Yeah.
Ugh. I don't know, it's just something about Snake that was always awesome. And also, another character I really liked was Cloud from Final Fantasy VII.
I nearly went Big Boss. Oh, yeah, yeah. The first... Well, not the first, but the first to make popular of those quiet, angsty characters from RPG.
Yeah, he was like this angsty character, but then deep down he cared about what was going on. And his character arc throughout the game changes from, like, mercenary to hero, etc. Yeah. You know, that sort of thing.
I do like that kind of story, but that one does sort of remind me of a lot of anime.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, okay, so Solid Snake and John Marston, to answer your question finally, Reef. Thank you for waiting. He's asked us no other questions because he's like, no, you answer that one.
Yeah.
You don't get any more questions until I get my answer, which is fair.
Yep.
So, all right, thank you. Thank you, Callan, very much.
Yep.
You've done well.
Thanks.
All right, so that brings us to the end of the show. We're going to jump straight into what we always end on. Our lame train and hype trains.
Yay.
And to start off with, we're going to go lame train. All right, Callan, what's yours? I'm going to throw you under the train, so to speak.
It's fine. It's easy. PAX is only 3 days long. I finished up at PAX. I wanted more. I wanted day 4 and 5. That's it.
Yep.
Simple. I had such a great time there this time, so really enjoyed it, and I can't wait for next year. But yeah, it's only 3 days long. That's my lame train.
Awesome. And I mean, as a event organizer, or, you know, all the people who are responsible for PAX, they must love that the biggest complaint that we possibly have is that it's just not long enough.
That's right.
You know, that's a pretty good lame train. Mine is that Super Mario Odyssey and Assassin's Creed Origins came out on the same day, and we bought them both. Just two huge games at the same time. They're both massive. They both beg for your attention while you're playing the other. It's just, come on, just separate them by a month or something, even 2 weeks.
There was also Wolfenstein, which came out the same day and also has been getting nines around around the reviews as well. So it's like, what?
And then I had to watch... I didn't have to. I wanted to, and I did, which means I kind of had to. Stranger Things 2, which is amazing. But it's like, you're watching it going like, I could really be playing Assassin's Creed right now, Mario. But yeah, so that's another good lame train, I guess. It's been a very positive couple of weeks in the world of gaming.
Yep.
That said, what is your hype train?
Hype train. My hype train is that PUBG got a release date for Xbox, so I'm excited to play that come December 12th. Because you've never played a game like that, and I'm excited to see what you think of those types of Battle Royale style games.
Yes, I'm excited to see what I think of them as well. Very excited. My hype train is all the love that VR and PSVR is finally starting to get. The VR showing at the Paris Games Week PlayStation presentation was massive. Just massive. And just like I was kind of hoping for, if you guys remember me saying earlier in PlayStation Plus, they're starting to finally drop in these PSVR games for free. You know, like they had Rigs earlier, and now they've got Until Dawn Rush of Blood, which are both really good ones, not just like crappy little side things, or they're like full great games. So I'm very excited to see that kind of start to take off a little bit more, especially because I have one and I'm like, come on guys, make this worth it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's my hype train. And that's us.
Wow.
So next time we're gonna jump into Super Lucky's Tale and Call of Duty World War II.
Yeah, we're gonna
play that and chat about it.
We're gonna do split reviews again to cover both.
Another double feature. Yep.
Another double feature, but it's that time of year when everything's coming out, so we like to cover as much as we possibly can, so that's why we're doing it this way again.
Yes. Yep, and obviously you'll hear me and Callan's scores of the games that we didn't review this week.
Yes.
We'll just chuck in our opinions. And that's the show, guys. Thank you for listening. And that brings us to our closing fact with Callan.
So this is in regards to Super Mario. And I'm so sorry to everyone that likes Mario, and this is going to change your opinion on Mario. According to the Super Mario Bros. Instruction book, when the Koopas first invaded the Mushroom Kingdom, they turned its people into blocks. Now, I'll just let you sit with that for a second. Think of how many blocks Mario breaks in all the Mario games.
Oh, man. Oh, man. And it just makes it even worse when you, like, you know, you... I don't know if you've guys seen this or if you've seen this, Callum, but when they zoom in to, like, all of them now, but even from the very, very first Super Mario Brothers, when he jumps up, he's not... It's different if he's kind of in pain as well and smashing it with his head, but he's punching those with everything he's got with his hand.
Yes. Yes.
He's punching the living hoo-ha out of those bricks.
That's right. Well, thank you so much for listening.
Thanks, guys. This has been Game Train.